Welcome to the Zulu Time podcast, a straight talking conversation between two watch enthusiasts about the world of military watches. I hope you enjoy.
Hello and welcome to episode 80 of the Zulu Time podcast with your host Dan from Timely Underscore Moments. So guys, I hope you enjoyed our last episode, episode 79. Ben is a really interesting bloke. So I hope you learned all about the Royal Naval Submariner Service, because obviously I did, even though I've been loosely around some submariners throughout my time in the military. But, you know, to learn about the subset of watch culture within that community was quite interesting, and to see obviously the importance of timekeeping and also the special place in which some military special project watches do sit within that community was really interesting. So if you haven't listened to that episode, go check it out. Ben's a really good guy, and obviously just, you know, like and follow him, drop him a message on Wrist of Today. Today's episode is another interview episode. This episode has taken probably about 2.5 months to organize. I'm not going to lie to you guys, mainly because I got busy after the coronation. He got busy with a posting from Alaska down to, I believe, Texas. I'm going to guess. He'll correct me in a second. But he got busy with that. And then our schedules have just been all over the place, because I decided to basically fuck off on leave and go overseas to Cyprus and get a tan. But we're back. And I'm really happy to be able to introduce you, Alex, from the Army in Time podcast. Alex, welcome to my podcast, bro.
Thank you, man. Thank you. Yeah. It's a pleasure, man. I know it's been like 2.5 months. Yeah, it's been kind of hard scheduling everything together with the time and like all the stuff. But happy to be here, man. I came to Kansas. That's where
that was
I came.
It. That was it, Kansas. I was like, oh, it ends in ass. I've got it. Like, it's one of them. I've got it. And I sat there and I thought, it's also a lot warmer than Alaska. Like, I remember that
a lot warmer.
You know. Yeah. And I can see as well, like, just so you're aware, guys, me and Alex can see each other. As you know, I always do the podcast as a video call so that we don't talk over each other. But all I'm going to say is the dedication of this man to get onto the podcast with me is phenomenal, because he is podcasting from his car. So all I'm going to say is, like, podcasters will podcast. That's all I've got. Like,
exactly. Yeah, exactly. 100%. Yeah, I got a little tied up with some work stuff, but like I said, I'm happy to be here. So we got to make it happen. So
yeah, exactly. No, I'm pleased, man. I'm pleased. And it's good to finally obviously meet you. And actually talk to you properly, because I know it's been 2.5 months that we've been organizing this and deconflicting our schedules. But Alex, as you're the guest on the podcast, and there is two traditions to Zulu Time podcast. One is a wrist check, and obviously the last one is a closing note. Please tell me, what watch have you got on your wrist today?
So today I'm actually wearing, for the first time, is a new watch.
Oh, nice.
That I got. Yeah, I got a Zodiac Skin Diver.
Nice.
9214. I got it when I was about a week ago. I went to training.
Mm-hmm.
And while I was in training, I couldn't really get into my phone. So at night, I would get on my phone.
Mm-hmm.
And one night, I started getting on my phone and finally caught a really good deal. So couldn't pass it up. And nice. And ended up getting it. I arrived to the house while I was in training still. So it's the first time I wear it today.
Nice, man. I like it. New watch alert for you.
For sure.
I've handled some of the modern Zodiacs. I think they're really cool. Yes. I've never had one personally in the collection. I think it's something that I will have to have a look at, because I mean, I know that they are constantly innovating on their designs. I like the Seawolf 53 variants. And I was fortunate, actually, when I kind of first got bigger into watch collecting, and it was when I was posted overseas in Cyprus, and a good friend of mine who is also due to come on the podcast in terms of recording this week, and obviously his episode will go up later on, he actually had an original, bro, like Seawolf 53 diver.
Oh, nice.
So like the original, like 33 mil kind of thing, you know, one that you'll see on like all the old historic photos of like US Navy SEAL guys cutting around the
exactly.
jungle. Yeah, it was really cool. I regret to this day not actually committing to that watch, but it was really cool to see it. You know what I mean? The guy had it. My Andreas, the dealer at the time. If I remember correctly, it was a silver slash white dial, and it was even on its original bracelet. So yeah, he was really fortunate to have that watch. It was really cool. So the watch that I've got on my wrist is also a new watch. Well, I say it's a new watch. It's a new watch for the recording of the podcast, and it's the first time it's been announced on the podcast, but obviously it's not new in real life because people would have seen it on the feed. But I'm finally can announce that I'm wearing my Seiko 6139 7012. And this is really cool and important for me in terms of the collection because it's actually the rarest issue watch that I've got. There's about 6 to 8 of these in the world within collecting circles. Oh, wow. And this particular variant, as it were, was issued to the Japanese Air Self-Defense Force in the 1970s. This one was issued in 1972, or was at least made in 1972. Whether it was issued in that year or not, I don't know. Just going off the serial number. But it would have been, obviously, in 1970s issued to the Japanese Air Force at the time, and it's so cool because it's got the Japanese pilot wings engraved on the back. So the case back is fully sterile. It just has the pilot wings on the back, and then all the Seiko details that you'd expect to see on the normal 6139, the same model, they actually engraved them on the inside of the case back. So it's still got all the Seiko stuff but on the inside, and they just decided to have the sterile, like the pilot wings, and some kanji lettering underneath the pilot wings, which effectively says along the lines of, you know, property of the Japanese Air Self-Defense Force. So cool watch, man.
That is super cool, man.
Really cool watch. Really cool watch. And I've been wearing it quite frequently since it came into the collection. And it's just a really cool one. It came on its original bracelet, but I've got on a leather button strap just to kind of just see what other straps it would kind of suit. And I think the 70s aesthetic and vintage vibes on this is going well. That's what I've got. That's what I've got. And clearly, you can tell I'm excited about it because it's just a cool watch.
Yeah, it's a cool watch, man. Like the uniqueness of it it just adds to it, you know. Like the little details, like adding the text on the inside of the case back as opposed to outside.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. That is pretty cool.
And the previous owner, a guy called Dev, he's been interviewed on the podcast multiple times. So shout out to Dev. But he did a lot of research, bro, in getting it. And he actually managed to get it from effectively Japanese eBay. And the reason he bought it in the first place was because he served with the US Marine Corps out in, I believe it was Okinawa and all that kind of stuff. So he flew out there. He's and that's his connection as well for the air aviation side, is he's an ex Hercules C-130 flight engineer. So he always wanted a Japanese, you know, military flying watch to kind of commemorate that element. And then it was just one of those, man, where he decided he just didn't wear it as much and it needed to be appreciated by someone else. And, you know, fortunately for me, I kind of got the call and I wasn't going to let that kind of, you know, go to waste, as it were.
Exactly. Yeah. That's for sure. That is for sure.
It definitely helps to know people in the watch fam, bro. You know, that's what I'm saying.
Exactly.
Alex, bro, I've listened to your podcast and we're going to talk about obviously why you set that up and obviously, you know, where you want to take that. But there would have been a time, as with myself, where we weren't into watches. And with us as serving military, I kind of pinpoint that as the moment before you join the army is you're not really into watches. And then you join the army and you're told to get a watch. Now, is that effectively what got you into watches, or am I completely wrong on that?
No, it's so basically, yes, you're on point. So when I took notice of watches before I joined the army, mainly because my mom used to be the person that worked as a AD for Cartier back in Puerto Rico when I was before I joined the army, and going to work with her every now and then when I was a kid over the summers. I would see the guy in the back working, the watchmaker, working on the watches. I would see her in the front selling the watches. And I kind of took notice of watches.
Yeah.
The crazy thing is that My mom was an AD for Cartier, but my dad bought a Rado,
Okay, yeah.
so that was the first time I really like took a notice of something different, because his Rado was square and it was ceramic, and to me, I didn't understand that there was another material that wasn't steel for watches. So it was, this is so long ago, to me it was very, very unique. So I took notice, but didn't really buy into the whole thing of having watches myself. I thought it was cool and that was it. And then I joined the military and started, basically had to get a watch. And from there, it just kind of started the whole thing of, okay, this watch is cool, but what about this other watch? Why is this watch more expensive? What does it have? And then from there, it started to go. I obviously started with G-Shocks, and I quickly, believe it or not, I quickly jump away from G-Shock into Casios, but not the G-Shock lines. So I would get more into the smaller versions of the Casio, the tough Casios, the wearing label on the G-Shock, and then from there, it just escalated very quickly.
It becomes an affliction, is what I like to call it. You know, it's a collecting affliction. Not that I want to obviously pinpoint your age, but it's interesting. You talk about how your mum was an AD for Cartier, but your dad went down Rado. You know, just guessing off, you know, we're probably of a similar age, but you know, Rado, to make a ceramic watch at that time was probably quite, you know, forward thinking, you know, given the fact that, you know, we kind of think, you know, that ceramic in terms of watchmaking has probably been around, you know, prevalently in the last 10 years. You know, you look at IWC now with their ceramic cases, and obviously Tudor with their ceramic Black Bay that they brought out, and then obviously other, you know, big Swiss market brands effectively bringing out ceramic. Like now we kind of take it as a given. But I mean, back when you were growing up, I bet that was like probably quite a one-off, you know, kind of statement piece at the time.
Yeah, no, 100%. And my dad used his watch for everything. He never took it off. He would go anywhere with it. So to me, the crazy thing, it was coated in like gold color, yellow gold. So, you know, it was flashy at some points, but then I would see him wearing so much everywhere. It was very weird to me. And he wore it so much back then, the bracelet started losing the coating, and you could see the ceramic whitish color on it, and I was like, what is this? And to me, it was so crazy. So it was definitely one of those things where the combination of like, I thought, man, this is a crazy material, this is insane, like how they get to do this, all this stuff. So when I started collecting, one of the things that I first started researching was ceramic and how they used it, because that stuck in my head for so long, and how he used it for everything, and it stood, you know, it basically withstood everything. So it was pretty interesting for me,
Yeah, it's
for
pretty
sure.
cool. And like you said, the fact that it's, you know, it at the time as well, you know, again, we talk about, you know, so I got off an episode with AJ a couple of episodes back by the time this releases. And, you know, we were talking about bezels and case movements, case manufacturing, but like even stuff like case finishing there, where you talk about how it would have been like PVD or, you know, coated in gold, you know, and how that well worn off because he wore it so much. It's interesting, isn't it, how, you know, if we wouldn't expect that in watches nowadays that are PVC or DLC coated, we would, you know, we'd probably have a go at certain companies if you're starting to have your case finishing, you know, come off, you know. But it's interesting, isn't it? I think it's quite cool that, you know, that watch lived effectively and had a story, and you remember it. But it's interesting how you also went down the route that every soldier goes through, or every military person goes through, which is Casio and a G-Shock of some sort. I remember going through, and I had I've never owned, you like this, I've never owned an F91, never. I've seen them all over the place, but I've never owned one. And it's not because I don't want one. I think they're great watches. I genuinely do. But I know for me in my collection, they just wouldn't sit. One wouldn't sit in my collection, even though I could pick one up tomorrow. You know, I could order it on Amazon; it'll be here tomorrow. But it's interesting to see how we all at some point have a Casio, and my Casio was a D5600. I had one of the square ones again, but it wasn't. Sorry, it wasn't a D5600 because obviously they're G-Shock, but it was, you know, it's the Casio square that is said tough on it, similar to what you were saying, but you know, not the G-Shock variant. But I actually broke it. The lug cracked on me on an exercise, and it ended up pinging off. So I probably still have it in, like, you know, the multiple boxes that you always move around with. It's probably buried under one, but I do remember cracking it, and losing, effectively losing the watch, and having to like just pick it up and go, oh, that's going in a pocket. Like, I was like, you know what I mean? I was like, oh, I guess I need a new watch now. You know, but yeah, it's quite funny. You know, but after Casio, what was your first analog watch when you started collecting?
So I actually had a couple of analog watches from Casio itself, Duros and other, you know, cheaper brands. I also had the whole moving towards Fossil watches and those type of brands that you get in the mall. And you know, one thing that I noticed was that, yeah, I was buying a lot of watches, different watches that basically for anyone else, it would last probably, it'll be fine. But back then for me, they weren't lasting as long. So I was either breaking the glass or doing other stuff with it. And it, you know, I decided to move more upwards, and I got a old Tissot PR100. That was my first watch itself. Was it a 100? I think it was a 100, either 100 or 200. It was a chronograph, so I think it was a 200. And that was the first watch I got from going more upscale, and it stayed with me for quite a bit. But very quickly, I found out chronographs weren't for me, so I started to move away from those. I think I credit probably that Tissot with being the first watch that I bought that was mechanical, that I bought because I wanted a better watch and I wanted to go the mechanical route, the analog route. Because those other watches that I had, that were basically Casioduros and so and watches like that, and Fossils and stuff, I didn't buy them knowing what they were, right? Like Fossil obviously is a fashion brand.
Yeah, it is.
But when you're talking about Casioduros nowadays, people like Casioduros, but and those style of watches like that. But back then I didn't buy that because I knew what it was. You know, I bought those watches just because it was available at the military store, and I was buying them because I needed one to go with. So I think those days I was more into, let's buy something that tells time, that I can wear, and it's tough to wear. But the first watch that I bought as I got into watches and going upward was the Tissot, and I think that's the one that I credit with being that first watch
Nice.
for sure.
So, in terms of obviously your expanding and growing collection, you've mentioned there very quickly, you mentioned obviously AFEES, you know, or the PX or the BX and all that kind of stuff. And obviously, guys, check out Alex's podcast. So, you know, he'll go into detail about how he's got some of his watches, and obviously there is certain ways for you to get them, but we won't ruin it on my podcast. But effectively, guys, military discount is a thing and it really helps. But exactly, you know. But in your current collection, just give us the, you know, the lowdown, the highlights of watches that are currently in your collection to date.
So, you know, right now I'm actually going through a process of like moving around my collection, and pretty much from, if you look at my Instagram from the last probably month or 2 months to now, my collection has drastically changed. And especially change in going down in sizes and some other stuff too, but the highlights that for me recently in my collection, obviously the Omega Seamaster, the White Dial 300 SMP, that's one of the watches that I love the most. The Grand Seiko, but honestly, at the lower end is what I'm loving the most right now. So obviously Sanguin, obviously Notice, the Notice Deep. I can't praise that watch any more than what I already do. And people that listen to my podcast, they know I praise it a lot. I think the execution of how the markers are tucked in into that, it gives you that air of the Pelagos
Yes, it does.
without the price. So it has cues from different watches that, but it's very uniquely noticed. And to me, it's that was executed so well that I can't praise it anymore. So between that and my Sangings, I think that changed a lot of my perspective when it came to collecting, especially the sizing. Because with the Notice being starting at 39 in the case, that took me into experimenting with 39s more. So I moved into the Grand Seiko. The Grand Seiko is 39 and a half. And then the Oris, obviously I didn't buy the Oris. It was a crazy story of how I won it, but that's also the 39 and a half, and that I got to choose the sizing. So I chose the 39 and a half. And I think the Tissot PRX is another one that changed my collecting a lot, because I didn't plan to buy that watch. I walked into an AD for to buy a watch for my wife, which it was a long process, because I'm not exactly very fond of buying watches for other people, because I think it's a very dangerous thing. A lot of
Oh
times you don't
yeah.
know if they're gonna like it. So I did a lot of thinking back, research, like looking at what she wore, and I went to buy this watch, and they had the PRX. And I had seen it before, and this is before the whole craze for PRX really started. So it wasn't out there yet. And I was like, you know what? Let me try it on. Let me see what this watch looks like, because I've seen it on the commercials and stuff. And it looks cool, but I don't know if it's good for me. And I put it on, and it just changed everything. And I was like, I'm gonna get it. So I after that, kind of, I don't know. The PRX is definitely one of those pieces that it probably would never move. I'm gonna pass it down as one of those watches that you don't have to care as much to pass down to someone that's 18 years old, because it's not that expensive. It's okay for them to go out there, enjoy the watch, and just do what they do. So that watch definitely is a staple in there. And then the Tissot Sea Star is one of those watches that actually I've been thinking about moving a lot, but it's hard for me to move, and I don't know why. I don't know. There is so many things I think, and I mentioned before that Tissot can improve on the Sea Star, especially the automatic version, the one that is super large. But I just can't bring myself to move it, and I don't know what it is, because it goes against everything else in my collection. So if I was to pinpoint pieces that I think in my collection pretty much identify what my journey is and what I want to use watches for, I would definitely say that the Tissot Sea Star. I would say the Tissot PRX. I would say the Grand Seiko and the Omega Seamaster for sure, and then the Deep from Notice. I think those pieces have struck me the most, have made the biggest impact in my collecting journey for sure.
I mean, all of those watches are really cool, fantastic watches. We talked very quickly, the PRX. I feel that the PRX Tissot have done really well with that line and that model because it exploded, right? Didn't it? Like, it literally exploded overnight. Everyone wanted them. And then obviously, in terms of like their dial options, their case options, you know, as well as the movements inside. You know, they are slowly innovating, and obviously that's what happens when you're a Swatch Group watch brand, effectively. You know, they have access to that. But I think like having the Powermatic movements in them are, you know, really good. And now that they offer them in quartz, I believe, as well, you know, you've got the options there. Like you said, depending on if you are a watch person or if you're not a watch person, or if you want a grab and go fun summer watch, because I equate them to like fun summer watches, you know, because of the dial colors and stuff, you know, or dressier tool watches is probably the best way to describe them, you know, right through to the Notice. I've never had experience with them, but I know from the groups that I follow that Notice have just obviously done a collab with Anti Watch Watch Club, which I think is really cool. And that watch just looks really cool. Like you said, it's got those markers are very, and I looked at it for a long time and I was trying to figure out again what it reminded me of, but you hit the nail on the head where you said the Pelagos kind of markers, and it's got that feel, then I can really see that. I've just never had, I don't believe anyone in England that I know of has got one, like a Notice in general. So I'll have to keep an eye out when I next go to like a Red Bar event to see if I can actually get hands on one. But again, they look really cool. Obviously, guys who followed my podcast for a long time will know that I'm a big Amiga fan. My father's watch that he gifted me, which was his first watch that he bought in the army, was an Amiga. I've had Quartz Seamasters. I've got two vintage Amigas in the collection at the moment. And I think Amiga, if you can punch at that level, you know, in terms, because you know it's a lot of money now, you know, and all of these brands are going up, and you know, unfortunately, due to you know that hurricane and tornado that went through Switzerland, they're probably going to be in more demand now than ever, because you know it depending on which parts, you know, but I'm assuming it hit parts of Amiga, but like you know, obviously those watches have gone up, and I've seen the prices of Seamasters go up over the last couple of years. I remember in like 2018, they were like 4 grand, and now they're touching six, you know, and if you can justify it, I think as a watch, like that is a watch. You know what I mean? There's a lot of watch for the money in that watch, be that movement technology, case technology, materials, engineering, and even like the warranty. You know, they're like, I think the warranty is like 5 or 7 years, and you know, there's not many companies out there that do that, and I think that's really good. And you know, I would love a modern Seamaster. I have tried them on multiple times, but as you can see, I've got tiny wrists. So, you know, you talk about 39 mil watches. This chronograph that I've got at the moment is actually a 39 mil watch, and I think it's a great size. Clearly, sizes, I don't really care. Like I wear watches up to 44 mil. But like they're a reason. They, you know, they're not made 44 mil just to be made at 44 mil. They've got a reason for it. And I think as long as it's got a reason, and for me, and you'll probably agree, but like if it's got a short lug to lug, like you can wear a larger watch, and you know, that's how I can justify it to myself. But like, you know, I would love a modern Seamaster, but I know that I couldn't own it on the bracelet. As much as I'd want to, the modern ones are just for me, just slightly too big on the bracelet. So I'd have to wear it on the rubber or a NATO strap, really. You know, you mentioned Sangin as well. So I've got a Sangin. In fact, I charged my Sangin up today. Because it's sunny and it's a Merlin, you just throw it into the sun. Which, you know, which is mental. Just leave it out there. But that's a, you know, it's a 40 mil case, and I think you know that as a sizing is really good, you know. But in terms of obviously now your day-to-day career, your like your job, obviously your communications, right? And I will hand and heart, right, fully admit to you that I'd know nothing about the signals, like communications or signals. When I went through int training, you like this, and it's a funny story. I got to the very end of my int training, and obviously it's where they start posting you into different specializations and stuff. And I had passed for imagery. You know, I'd done the aptitude, and I knew that I wanted to go do imagery because the idea of working with aircraft and satellites and all that kind of stuff and targeting that kind of stuff really interested me. I was like, yeah, I'm gonna go do that. And they were like, you sure? You sure you don't want a job? And they're like, you know, they were getting ready. That's the final exit interview, like from phase two. So you come in, you sat down in front of the company sergeant manager and the company commander, and they're like, yeah, this is your performance. These are your posting options. And it was just like, right, are you sure you want to do imagery? And I'm like, yes. But are you sure? And it's like, you know, like when it's just like that, you know, the two options, it's like the Matrix where it's like, do you want the blue pill or the red pill? And it's like, right, the red pill is, do you want a posting in electronic warfare? And I'm just like, absolutely not. And it's not because it's not a good job at all. Like I've met some guys who've made their career, you know, especially on my background and the inside, made the career out of it and really loved it. But bro, I can't understand frequencies or like how it works. I get that things happen, and I get that you bounce signals off like the ionosphere and all that kind of stuff. I get it. Wouldn't know how, would not know how to set it up. Like I just sit there kind of go, nah. Like this guy, like a friend of mine, like he used to study this. He's like, yeah, I just put on cans and like I'll just have like beeps and like dashes and like binary going through my ears and just like, you know, understand it all. I'm like, that is mental, you know. So I can never profess to knowing what it is like to be comms, but what I would say is being from an int background and now obviously in a photography background, I would say that the commonalities between comms and ints, and obviously now my current job, is that we're all secret nerds, I'd say. Like we're the geeks of the army, or the geeks of the military. So like I think watch collecting kind of comes hand in hand with that. But do you obviously what watches do you use on a day to day? But also do you have, you know, similar to what Ben mentioned in the last episode, in the Submariners episode, where there's a noticeable community of, because it's like-minded individuals, right? Where watches could be a thing, or you get guys who notice what you have on your wrist and they start talking about it. And because, you know, for want of a better expression, and no offense to any of you comms guys out there, but you are nerds. I can say it as a background for me, Ink Core, we also were nerds. We found watches fascinating because of how they're made, how they work, and also what they can do. Do you have that kind of culture within, you know, your experience of, you know, US Army communications?
Yeah, actually, it's so the crazy thing is, now that you mentioned that, this past week or 10 days that I was in training, I was training more in the intel side. And it was actually with electronic warfare. So it was really funny because as soon as I got there, I told the guy that went with me, and I was like, "Hey, I'm looking at people to see if I can find someone with a cool watch." And he was like, "Why?" And I was like, "Well, you know, this is Nerdland, and in Nerdland, we're gonna find people that like watches." So
Nerdland. This is
it's
Nerdland. Yes, it is.
And it didn't even take 10 minutes for me to wa find someone with a watch. So it was very cool. And I think it's one of those things where, you know, like you said, our jobs are so nerdy. Like we have to, like the, regardless of what specialization we do, it's all very technological and it's so many hassles about everything. And I think the simplicity of something that is mechanical and it doesn't take a battery, it amazes in the most simple way that I think majority of people tend to gravitate towards that. And another thing is with the whole, you know, secure areas and stuff like that, you don't get to take a phone, you don't get to take a smartwatch, you
Exactly
know.
that.
So a lot of times you got to leave everything outside.
Yeah,
So
you do.
to me, so to me it was like, why would I buy a smartwatch if I'm not going to be able to use it? So I don't think I think a lot of people end up buying watches that are mechanical or analog, and then they fall in love with it, and it escalates from there. So in our world, I think in the communication side and the intel side, I think you get to see more variety, right? Like of things. Because a lot of times when it comes to the rest of the army, there is a lot of interest in watches and timepieces with history attached to the military and stuff like and units that people have been with. But it's always very singular, I would say. Like special operations tend to be very heavy on special operations history, so it's going to be mainly, you know, Rolex Submariners, it's going to be Omega Seamasters, or it's going to be Panerais. So it stays very niche in those three brands. And if when they start, the only variation you're going to see is Seiko, so they're going to have a Seiko. But you technically see Seiko everywhere, but that's where it stays there. And then if you go towards the more infantry or combat, ground combat people in the military, you're going to see more of those field watches. Like you're going to see, you start seeing Hamilton, you start seeing Seiko a lot. And honestly, that's kind of where it stays, other than G-Shock. So that's kind of where it stays. So each area is very singular, but when it comes to communications and intel, I call it the nerd group, because people kind of buy into more watches, because now they're like, okay, well, I'm gonna go sit in a meeting for I don't know how long to talk about some either imagery or comms plan or something. I can wear a different type of watch. It doesn't have to be a diver. It doesn't have to be a field watch. So now you start seeing more difference into more variety into the watches that you see in people's wrist, that is not always a G-Shock or a Submariner or a Seamaster or a Panerai or a Seiko. So you start seeing a lot more variants than that, and it's definitely pretty cool, because and obviously as you go up in rank, you start seeing more people buying different things. When pilots are another group that is very singular on the style, at least. So you get Breitling, you get Citizen, but it's always going to be a watch that has some type of attachment to just flying. And I mean, this is it's obvious. It happens. It's attached to the specialization that you do in the military. But I just think that with Intel and Como, you get to see more variants, and I think that's pretty cool.
I think
So
as
I enjoy
well,
that.
yeah, I mean, I always think as well, like with my background in intelligence, like I was attached to various different arms. I don't know how it works with you in the US Army exactly, but I imagine you as a communications specialist can go be with a cavalry regiment, one posting, an artillery unit, another posting, an infantry unit, another posting, and maybe engineers or whatever. But like you said, that variety and the fact that you travel about, similar to like myself, my background in intelligence, like I've always been considered what they class as like joint warfare. So I've always been at mixed units, where you get that exposure. And it's interesting because, like you said, you get to this point where in your watch collecting like journey, for want of a better expression, you get so deep into it that firstly, you're renowned as the bloke who likes watches in your unit. And then secondly, you start to notice what's on people's wrists before you notice their faces. So like I had that moment. And then what's really funny with like we talk about skiffs, right? Everybody, right? And my one of my units when I was still in the Inc Corps was we just they all had Garmins, like all had Garmin Fenix 3s at the time, right? And so that shows you how long ago that was, because then like the Fenix 7, and they're great watches. I think they're fantastic, right? I do think they're great. But like I said, they can't go inside a skiff. So what's really funny is that you'd have these piles of watches and phones outside the skiff, and then you'd get the guys going in, right? Or coming out of their meetings, and they'd be picking up the wrong watches, and they'd be like clicking on the notifications to make sure whose watch is whose, which I found really funny. And like, oh, maybe you shouldn't read that text message that is from someone else's partner. But okay, clearly it happened. But it's funny to see that. But like, I remember like one of the first times we went into a skiff, and I had a obviously an automatic mechanical watch on, and like the guy who was in charge of security for that day was just checking the phones and the watches, and I remember him like doing the whole, bro, should you have that on? Like, and it's just like one of those smug moments as a watch guy where you just take it off and you show the back, go, yeah, there's no batteries in this. Look, it shakes. It's just like, look at this, it moves. So that was really cool. But like, and I really enjoyed that moment. But like that unit for me was an overseas unit where I had a load of different people from different backgrounds within the in world. And that's where we started to see the Royal We, I started to see a lot more variety in watches. So it was everything from Omega, Breitling, there's Rolex, Citizen, like vintage Citizen as well. I remember one of the operators, because he was an operator, he used to wear, you like this, a vintage Citizen Aqualand, like the diver, the
Oh,
analog.
nice.
Yeah, that was cool to see. And we'd always have these conversations about watches. And then, like I said, eventually I was known as the watch guy because I decided to do special projects with different companies and all that kind of stuff. And that's kind of where it grew. But it's funny, like you said, I'd still notice people's wrists before I notice their faces when I go into like meetings, especially planning meetings. And now that I'm a photographer, like I see a full spectrum of the military, everything from like the newest private right up to like high ranking, general staff officers. And it is always interesting to see what watches are on people's wrists, because like you said, it gets to a point where whether you're enlisted, non-commissioned, or commissioned, I figured that there's a crossover in A brands, but also types of watches. And it's interesting to see where that kind of line falls. Now, what I've realized, it's kind of around the rank of Staff Sergeant WO2 to in the British Army in a way. And it would be like your captains and your majors. And those watches will be the same no matter what. Like, it must be different models, but the brands that I've seen worn by those distinct ranks and those groupings are pretty much always the same. If it's not an issued watch, it is always an Omega, a Breitling, or a Tudor. I don't know, like, if you've noticed that, but I've noticed that,
No, 100%. Like, for us, it's the same way. I think as people start going up, I think probably about the rank of staff sergeant, and then for officers, captain, but it's very heavily major for sure. And then you start seeing those start become very common as it goes up. So yeah, it's definitely definitely the same for sure. For sure.
Have you found in your time of serving in Austin, now obviously clearly deep into the watch fam, that special projects have been a thing, or certain brands? We've mentioned Sangin earlier, and I know especially in America, there's obviously a big Sangin following because American brand, American military, there's that instant connection there. But I also know, for example, the Para Overlord is a big thing for those who have jump wings. So do you notice those watches now around units that you've had in your career where you're not specifically like the only person to have those? Or have you just seen like an increase in appetite where people go, I like watches. I have a few watches, but actually, I really would like a watch that commemorates my specialization, or something like that. Have you noticed that increase?
That for us, definitely. Like, I have noticed a lot more people, just like with the popularity of watches in the last couple of years has increased. The same thing in the military, it is increasing a lot. And then with the increase of everything becoming more secure, people are growing tired, like you said, of having to leave their watches outside in the hallway. So with that has come a lot more watches being there, mechanical watches and analog watches being there. And then when it comes to brands per se, I think two brands that from the United States that have made a big splash with the military and recently, definitely Notice and Sanging are pretty much in everyone's lips when it comes to the military. I think that the increase, and obviously as iterations go, they perfect their craft and they get better. And with their later releases on both sides, I think everyone is seeing the quality versus the price point, and a lot of people are jumping into it. And I think it has become very heavily in the military for those two brands in the United States. When it comes to bigger brands, like global brands, man, it when it comes to bigger brands, it's always going to be for us Omega and Rolex. And I think it's mainly because, I don't. So with Rolex, the thing is, you can go to the ADs in uniform, and it costs something, and you get your watches earlier than a lot of other people. So I think I don't know, it's a combination of that and the fact that there's Rolex and Omega are so heavily involved with the special operations in the US military and in the world, that it's just the names are very recognizable. So people want. So I have this joke, right? That in the army, everyone wants to be special forces, until it's time to be special forces. But because everyone wants to be special forces, they like the gear the special forces wear. So it I think that has to play with it,
Of course.
and I hate to say it, and I know people get mad about it, but the reality is people want to be like those units, and they see what those people are wearing, and they want to be like those people.
Of
So
course.
there's a lot of that. So there, a lot of people buy into Rolex Omega because of that. I think that afterwards, obviously, they fall in love with what those watches are. But originally, I think that's why. So I think those two brands are always going to be there from the big names. And I think it's really hard to go away from those two with the US military, just because military people in the US are very attached to historical, facts. And they just want to be able to say, no, I didn't get this watch because everyone else in the special forces community wears it. It's because it has a name with the US military. So those are always there. But on the smaller brands, I think Notice and Sanging are increasing so much in popularity in the military. I think every base that I go to, I see one of those watches. I either see a Sanging or I see a Notice. So I think those two brands are exploding this last 2 years for sure in the US military.
It's different. Obviously, I can only speak of my experience with the British military. I've had very limited, shall I say, for want of a better expression, exposure to the US military. I've only really worked with the Air Force, and this was before Sang, you talk about Sang and Notice, this is before those brands were really around. So, it was a lot of G-Shocks that I noticed on the US Air Force guys that I worked with. But for us over here, the brands that we see increasing are like Elliot Brown. That's the main one really that I've noticed is Elliot Brown. It's obviously, clearly you've listened to my podcast, you follow my page, I'm a big fanboy of them for want of a better expression, a big advocate for what they are doing. But it's interesting, isn't it, how there is a cultural difference, really. I think, and it's a bit like another American brand, but military owned independent, watch brand that I really like is Resco, right? I think Resco are fantastic. I've had fantastic communications with them. They can't do more for me, right? And the most difficult part of it in for a serving in UK or being in UK in general, to get hold of a Resco is really hard because they only ship continental US. So I have to use a friend and I'll be emailing Nicole at Resco and be like, right, Nicole, I'm gonna give you an American address, right? But I'm paying for the watch. And it always comes like a black market deal. You're like, right, okay, so it's going here, and then my mate will ship it from here to me. And you're it's mental. Just open up international shipping, Resco, and more people in Britain would buy them. And I think that's the thing, right? Is the fact that it comes down to, it sounds really bad, but I think there'll be more cross-pollination of these independent watchmakers across, the, NATO forces, for want of a better expression, if there was, easier transition for, and I get it, it's the modern world, right? We all have to pay import tax and shipping tax and stuff, and that always has to have an effect. But I think, say, in an ideal world where you removed all of that, I think you get a lot more cross-pollination with independent micro brands across the military, because we'd be able to get hold of them, quicker or easier. But it is funny that, that you said that you noticed Sangin and Notice across, obviously, your experience within the US military. We spoke about obviously Rolex and this idea of emulating the special forces is probably the best way to describe it. I said it, I think, whether you admit it or not, everyone who joined, every soldier I've met, right, in my experience, so I'm caveating, every soldier that I've met who joined the army at some point wished or wanted to be special forces. Whether you admit it or not, it is true. It's a bit like when you're seven, you go, do you want to be a fast jet pilot or an astronaut? Every person goes, yes, of course I do. It's pretty normal, right? And like I said, it's like you said, those brands have that connection. And with blogs like, Movements of Action, other blogs like Watches of Espionage, where it highlights those connections with those organizations, those entities, and those brands, I think it's really interesting to see how these are, like you said, these aren't just 10 years ago, associations. These have gone back years and years, be it right back to the issued pieces in the 1960s. This is pretty common. And then obviously before that, you've got Omega being issued to the British soldiers storming the beaches in 1944. This is things that just happened. But it's interesting to see that these brands are re-emerging, for want of expression, with these ties. Over here in England, Tudor, bro, is like really big one for special projects, and Breitling, Tudor, and Bramont, obviously, because it's a British brand, are big. If you're punching in that level of money when it comes to a special project, I would expect it be a Breitling, a Tudor, or a Bramont. on a person's wrist in the military because of that level of money, right? Rolex is really hard. You know, obviously we know that there are special projects with Rolex. You know, 22 SAS have, you know, got Rolexes. You know, 22 SAS and the SBS did various Amiga, Planet Oceans, and Seamaster variants over the years that we've now obviously since seen because of the joy of watch community sharing photos and writing blogs on it. You know, we know that these things are out there. You know, but it's interesting that I've seen an explosion of Tudor in the last couple of years, and that's even across like law enforcement. So there's a unit of police within the Metropolitan Police, which is Royalty and Specialist Protection. I don't know if you've heard of it, but effectively they do all of the ministerial and government bodyguarding, right? And all that kind of stuff. And obviously, clearly royalty as well. You know, but they commissioned a BB-58 in blue. And you know, it's got a Tudor rose on the dial, man. How cool is that? And I don't even think that they
Oh, yeah.
went, I don't know if they went to Tudor for it to be a Tudor rose. I don't know if the guy who led that project was a watch guy and knew that. But the fact that in 20, I think it was commissioned in 2018, 2019. But the fact that there is two sets of Tudor black bays with a Tudor rose on the dial now just is so cool. Because like you said, you sit there and kind of go, that just throws it right back to the original, you know, like Tudor Submariners that were issued back in the day. You know, and I think that's really cool. I'm yet to see one of those in person. I'd love to, obviously, you know. But have, yeah, of course. But have you noticed Tudor encroaching on like that special forces kind of, like I said, for want of expression, that emulation where a person will go, right, I've seen a guy wearing a big dive watch and it happens to be like a Pelagos, I'm gonna go and buy one. You know, have you started to notice that as well?
Yeah, no, definitely. I think Tudor is one of those brands that I think what I've seen the most is the replacement of Rolex for Tudor. Like a lot of people in the military are moving away from Rolex and getting with Tudor when it comes to historical dive watches. It's been an increase for sure. I think I saw the watch. I don't remember who posted it, a picture of it with the blue dial with the rose. Someone posted about it, and I remember seeing it. When you mentioned about it, I was like, okay, yeah, I know which one you're talking about. I think it's one of those things where the military here kind of we always gotta wait. You know how the military is, you always hurry up and then you end up waiting.
Carve and wait, yeah.
Yeah,
But at least
so
you get
I
to
think
wait
that
and
when it comes to
have a nice watch on, right? You know what
Yeah,
I
exactly. So I think that one of the things that we do is whenever we are outside military, we like everything to be opposite to that. So like if we have to wait so much, we don't want to do stuff that we gotta wait, stuff like that.
mean?
So when it comes to owning a Rolex, I think a lot of people are will like a Rolex, and then they come in and they end up seeing that it's not really what Rolex is now. It's not what it used to be when those guys used to wear it back in the 80s and 70s. So now I think that because there is a lot more people into watches now, a lot of people will redirect them towards Tudor. And I think that a lot of times what we see is, at least over here, is people that wants to get into Rolex and they don't want to wait, so they go ahead and start and get a Tudor. And I think there is a lot of growing into Tudor, kind of that replacement of, well, I'm not going to get a Rolex, I'm going to get a Tudor. And then they end up getting a Tudor. They obviously after that fall in love, and a lot of them will collect Tudor afterwards. But I definitely seeing an increase of, instead of a pairing of Omega and Rolex, is a pairing of I have an Omega and a Tudor. So I've seen that a lot lately also.
I have as well. And I think as well, like wider outside the military, you know, connections to those brands, I just think you also hit the nail on the head. I think it's just bro down to availability. You know what I mean? Like it's availability, it's like you said, it's having this relationship with an AD if you know, if you want that relationship, or if you believe that is right or wrong, you know, that's a completely different topic. Whether, you know, we should have these relationships and wait lists, that's a completely different topic. But, you know, fundamentally, I think it's, you know, it gets to a point, I think, in the military where you've got X amount of promotions behind you and you want to mark something, be it a promotion, a birthday, a milestone in your career, and you go and buy yourself a nice watch. And I think, like you said, it used to be a Rolex, it used to be a Breitling, Omega, whatever. But I think, like you said, Tudor's coming in and filling that gap because people can't get hold of the Rolex. And that's not a bad thing. And there's no slot on Tudor. If anything, it's just telling you that Tudor are doing more things and maybe are now, like you said, are the Tudor are the modern Rolex that was of the 70s, 80s, 90s. And it'd be interesting, I think, bro, if we fast forward 30, 40 years and we have a look at like the military watch game in 30, 40 years across issued watches, project watches, or just watches worn by personnel, it'd be really interesting to see the stories. I follow another page, the Wristorian. Have you heard of him? Yeah, he's a really great guy. I've spoken to him a few times. And like I said, he's got photos of Japanese pilots wearing these chronographs right through to, Rolex mil subs or, guys doing like nuclear. One of them was a really cool one. It was something like I think it was like an Aqualung or a Doxa, like, a small independent diver on a Navy guy who was doing testings of sonars with dolphins. And it's like really random watch, right? Like he would have just picked up, like you said, in like a BX or PX or his local shop, and he wore it for his career. And like I said, fast forward all of this into 30, 40 years' time, it'd be really interesting just to see what posts are being put up about the watches of our time. And I think that kind of stuff
Definitely.
will be really interesting to see what is considered collectible in that time and like what the watch media, and the community is like when it comes to military watches in the future. Obviously, we can talk about military watches or watches within the military field, clearly years, me and you. But we both have another thing in common, which is we set up a podcast. What made you, because I know what obviously made me push the effectively, make the jump or pull the pin to make my podcast. And thankfully, guys, you guys have sat through with me 80 episodes of listening to me rant at people half the time or with people about watches. And thank you for your support, obviously. But I did it because I felt that there was an outlet to talk about military watches. I felt that I was qualified to talk about military watches through being in the military. And I'm not about to say I'm the coolest or most, special forces bloke in the world, but I like to think that I've had experience and variety across my career to be able to know a lot about, how to get watches, how issued watches work, what are issued watches in my time, what I've seen guys wear, or girls wear, and all that kind of stuff. And I felt that I was qualified to talk about at the time military watches because, a couple of years ago, well, 3 years ago, no one was talking about it in the manner which I felt was accessible. Isn't it a similar story with why you set up Army in time, or is it also just because you clearly enjoy talking about watches and you wanted to corral people to talk about it?
That's definitely it's exactly what it was for me. So I started, listening or reading about watches, listening to podcasts and stuff like that. And I think that there's always a couple of podcasts that I'll have always loved, and I think they do a great job. But I think that a lot of times for me it was the same thing. I thought there wasn't as much of a talk about military watches from the perspective of military people. I used to always complain about watching different media outlets about watches, and it was always a superstar, a sports, famous person, or an actor or an actress, whatever it was. Because to me, I always said, well, of course they like that watch because they probably got paid to wear that watch.
Of course.
And a lot of times, even with the people that were had watch collections, it was always like extremely high-end watches, and oh, this is so cool. This is not a super high-end piece, and it was, a super rare Rolex. It's like, come on, man, like
Exactly. It's not
that's
relatable. You're
not
like,
relatable.
to you, it's not like it's like I really like the Hodinkee. I do like Hodinkee, right? And I do like the videos. I think as a media specialist now, I think they're shot well, they're edited well, and all of that's really good. I think they're high production bits of, video, right? But it's really funny when they get John Mayer on there and he's just like, oh yeah, I almost bought this watch, but I couldn't stomach that price. And it's just like, bro, if you can't stomach that price, no one watching this video can stomach the price of that watch. Like, get off.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's like, and whenever it's like someone, and I took that story from them because, you know, sometimes he'll have someone who is a, you know, an actor or something, and they're like, oh, my first watch, I walked in and bought this Rolex. It's like, sure, you walked in and bought that Rolex because you're a star. You know, and to me, it was like, it was very unrelatable. And I wanted more voices to be able to have not just more relatable content, but relatable to military and law enforcement people. Because a lot of times, you know, to me, it was the whole, you know, someone telling me, oh, you know, just go get a G-Shock. So, no. That's not what I want. So, you know, yeah, sure, a G-Shock can do the job, but I like watches. And I guarantee you there are watches out there that I can buy that will get the job done and are interesting to people. So, to me, I was like, I want to talk about that. You know, like I don't want to always get on and talk about Rolex or Omega. I want to also talk about, you know, Tissot or, you know, Seiko or the stuff that are made by independents or small brands like Notice and Sanging and you know, Okanoskr or whatever it is that is, you know, smaller brands that Elliot Brown and stuff like that, that people know they're actually watches worn in the military or by law enforcement, but outside those communities, people don't really talk about them, you know? So I was like, that's what I want to talk about. That's what I think I'm going to start it because it's always been, before I started, you know, your podcast, Rico's Watches podcast, Jason from Watch Rolling, there's been a couple of podcasts that have that lane. But I was like, I'm gonna add to it. I want more people talking about this. So that's where I started it.
Yeah, it's good, man. And also the other side of it is, the watch community. I was talking to, Justin from the Recon watch blog. I've been talking to him a lot since he recorded with me. And it's funny, isn't it, how we all connect over watches, but then we have something else that connects us. And obviously, in our case, and Justin's case, obviously, it's the military or service. And then we add in, and we kind of just stay and form these relationships with the people, right? Because it's not always about sending watch photos or going, oh, I got a new strap, or I got a new watch. It's, oh, I want to actually check in with you and see how you're getting on, or oh, how did your posting go, and all that. And I think that's what it is. Like I've said to a lot of people lately, that you come into this hobby, however you come into it, you get what you collect and you like what you like. And I think it's one of those where we come for the watches but stay for the people. And I think that's what these podcasts are about. And I spoke to Justin last night, and we were talking about, I'm now a contributor to his watch blog, which I think is really cool. I thank him for allowing me now to kind of express my passion for watches in a slightly different manner. So obviously in a written form, which would be quite cool to experiment with that, as it were. But at the end of the day, like I felt like, or I still feel that podcasts, watch blogs, at our level, the independent ones where we're not necessarily getting endorsements from brands. Yes, we have the brands that we like, and we have recognition from the brands that we like, but we're not getting endorsement or payment by them to say, this watch is amazing, please buy it. I think it's great to educate, right? And have the more points of view out there for free. I think the more that we can educate the rest of the watch collecting community in order to be a informed consumer, right? Because at the end of the day, I remember coming in, bro, like into this hobby 10 or 12 years ago. And yes, Hodinkee was around. I look back on it and know that they were around, but I didn't know where to look. I didn't have anyone, to listen to. I remember the first big watch podcast that I listened to was a Two Broke Watch Snobs podcast, and I still listen to them today. I'm still supportive of them. Kaz and Mike do great things. But like they were like one of probably two podcasts out there, and that was it. And I think that's it. I think the more that we can get our points of view out there and interview people and let, like I said, the little guy, as it were, for want of a better expression, have his, has hit, their time and their moment and their voice and opinion out there, I think we can only inform the watch collecting community better. I don't know if you agree on that, but that's how I see it.
Yeah, no, I agree 100% because To me, it's like, sometimes I see a lot of posts where people say, I want to buy a watch for this amount. And someone will say, well, just save that, double that, and then buy this other one. No. That's not what he said. He said he wants to buy it for this price. Doesn't matter what the reason is, that's the price point. And, to me, it's like exactly what you say. I want people to know, get more information about the independent brands, the smaller brands, everything, even the big brands. It doesn't matter. Everything that they can and how they translate to real use in the military or in the real world so that they can make a safe assumption. Because, when I started collecting watches, I felt trapped to the thing that everyone was telling me, oh, if you're gonna buy a watch, it has to be 300 meters or more. If not, you can't take a shower with them. And then I quickly realized it's not the truth. So a lot of times, a lot of my collecting changes I went through, and I was like, why people will say that? Like, it doesn't make sense. But now I understand a lot of people collecting watches got into it and got told the same thing, and they're just recycling what they got told. So I want it's good to break that cycle, to be able to say, no. If you're in the military, if you're not a diver, which is not many of us, you don't need 300. You perfectly fine with 100, you'll be fine. Just have a screw down crown, you'll be fine. So to me, I think that it's great to be able to expand on that and break that recycling of ideas so that people can get into this hobby and experience it and be happy with it,
Yeah,
you know.
exactly. No, I agree. I agree. Funny that you mentioned a diver, I had as minimal divers in the military comparatively, because there are. And we talked about 100 meters water resistance. I'm going to put it in the show notes because you just reminded me. But obviously, if you've not watched this either, I'll send it to you the moment we get off this recording. But Teddy Baldassare did a really good video with I believe he's now marketing for watches, but a guy, I forget his name, but he's also into watch photography, and there's a watch page now, and I think it's the Diver's Locker or something. Anyway, I'll put it up, guys. I'm butchering this. I'm just gonna put the link into the show notes. But he went diving with the Seiko 5 GMT, the new one. Funny enough, it's 100 meters water resistance without a screwdriver count, and he took it down to 30 meters, and it was absolutely fine. So if he can do that, guys, 100 meters in your shower, you'll be fine.
Exactly. And that's what I always say. And it's funny that you mentioned that video, because I saw that video when he did that. And he also made a video where he took on a helicopter 100 meters up and he threw G-Shocks off the helicopter. And I mentioned that video all the time because I tell people, if you don't know, I think that the problem is with phones, smartphones, and everything, people lost the concept of measurement. And people don't know what 100 meters is. And I was like, go look at that video and see how high that guy is. And then tell me that that's not enough, because you are not going to go down that much at all. Majority of people that get certified as a diver would do it around 30 to 60 meters. And that's to get certified as a diver. So, yeah, it's to me, it's like, it's crazy. And it's funny that he did that one with the Seiko 5, because it's a push-pull crown too.
And this also harks back to other conversations I've had with AJ over at the Analog Explorer podcast. We talked about case construction and stuff like that before, but this is the thing, right? Modern technology, modern case construction, modern just manufacturing, our 100 meter tolerances with a screw, without a screw down crown, with just a normal push pull crown with maybe double seals, is more water resistant than a 1960s Rolex Submariner with a screw down crown at 200 meters. Why? Because we can machine metal better, because we've got better case technology, we've got better, rubber gasket technology now, we've got lubricating, like self-lubricating, like watches effectively, and all that stuff that goes into watches, but aren't animal based. They don't gum up. It's all synthetic based stuff that can run for years. Our watches now are made in, fathomably better than anything made in the 60s. And funny enough, we still pay that money for a 60s one because it's the nostalgia of that. It's got patina and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But like the robustness of that watch is nothing compared to even like a basic Seiko 5 now that's got 50 meters water resistance, and a chintzy Seiko bracelet that we all love or hate. You know what I mean? That is still physically better than a Rolex made in 1960, because it is. And I think, like you said, people forget that.
Yeah, no, they definitely do. And I think, it's crazy because you're talking about all that stuff. It remind me when I was reading a book, a watch book, not too long ago, probably about a month ago, that the guy in there is going through, and this he talk about watches in very in length, but there is a portion where he talks about maintenance, and he's talking about mechanical watches, and he's talking about how don't let them stop because it's gonna gunk up, it's the oils are gonna go dry and all this stuff. And I was like, well, this book is definitely not aging well because nowadays with the type of synthetic oils that we use and stuff like that, they don't do that.
No,
So
exactly.
it's crazy that we don't update our thinking also, because that book is not for right now. It was for back then. And
Exactly.
nowadays, like you said, our engineering and our production of even mass produced watches is so much more advanced that you're gonna get a very different product. And what was marketed before as being the top dog, with the lower end today, we can beat the top dog back then. So
Yeah, exactly.
it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, and like I said, the final bit to talk about this before we move on is it's really funny about how you talk about, automated and mass-produced watches. Look at Tudor, look at Omega, look at Rolex. A lot of their manufacturing now is with robots, right? It is, right? Bremont, for example, and I know this because I've been there, they can machine metal to, I think it's something stupid, like I think it was like 100 microns, and I think that is basically the eighth of the width of the eighth of the width of the average human hair, right? That's how tolerant that we can machine metal to now, right? And it's really funny how we put this big spin, right, don't we, on mechanical watches having a soul because it's been made by a watchmaker and because it's old fashioned and it's the way we used to do things, right? But fundamentally, the squidgy human being who's putting that movement together is actually the thing that is actually the most dangerous thing for that movement, because the human being could be tired that day. He could have, he or she could have tired eyes. They could, maybe they've not eaten properly, so they got the shakes, so they scratch your movement pulling it together, right? They have to do all the timings and the regulations of that movement as well. But funny enough, all these movements now, all these watches, where they've removed people and put in, automated manufacturing processes, we can make these watches so much better, so much more quickly, and actually you get a better product. But like you said, it's funny how we harken back to this romanticized idea of a little Swiss elf hand making your watch. It doesn't happen anymore, and it shouldn't. And it's the point, is it shouldn't happen. As much as we like the idea of it, it shouldn't happen, because fundamentally the reason why these watches all patina in different ways or have different tolerances is because each watch was made individually, because each person who assembled that watch was slightly different, And whereas, like I said, I just think modern technology can just, make modern watches better. I like the argument all the time where they're like, don't swim with a Speedmaster because it's only got 50 meters of water resistance. It's just like, just swim with the Speedmaster, don't dive with the Speedmaster, and don't press the buttons on the Speedmaster underwater, and you'll be fine. I mean, when the new one came out a few years ago, it was on the Hodinkee and on the Fratello watches, because I like Fratello watches as well. Their review of the Speedmaster, they said that Omega actually gave them, or sorry, Omega tested the 3861 master chronometer, movement and Speedmaster, both the Hessalite and the Sapphire, to the same battery of tests that NASA put the original Speedmasters through to certify them for space. Funny enough, guess what happened? All the watches passed, and it's just like, of course it passed, because we've made it in 2022. It's made so much better. So when people go, don't swim with your Speedmaster, makes me want to go and buy a Speedmaster and just swim with it, because I know it'll be fine. You know what I mean? I know it'll be
Yeah.
fine. And people are like, oh no, you
Yeah.
don't know. It's like, no, I know it'll be fine because I'm not going
Yeah.
diving to past 50 meters. Because if I'm
Yeah.
50 meters below the water, my decisions that have taken me to that location have drastically gone wrong for me. And I will not be thinking about
Exactly.
what watch is on my wrist, you know?
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, even 30 meters is like, don't think I'm going to be at 30 meters anytime soon. So,
No, exactly. And if I am, I'm not going to be conscious at that depth for very long, you know?
exactly.
So,
So, yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. But yeah, it's that recycle idea, the recyclement of ideas that people have in any hobby, and in here is, with watches, that it just tends to not go away. So.
We need to break that mold, guys. And like I said, I'm all here for it, Alex. If you want to keep breaking that mold with me, we'll keep doing it.
Yeah.
We'll keep recording. We'll keep doing it. That's fine.
Definitely, definitely. Yeah.
In terms of the podcast, then, Alex, where do you see the Army and Time podcast kind of going? Do you have any plans for it other than just interviewing cool people? You know, do you have any like grand plans for it coming into, the end of 2023 and into 2024? Do you have any ideas?
So for the podcast, for me, the main, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, bro.
Okay. So the podcast for me, one of the things that I want to do more that I haven't been able to do is to be able to basically bring people that want to do put their story out there. It's kind of hard to convince people to put their story out there because, like we were talking about with the whole military thing, it's people are afraid of telling their story because they don't want to get in trouble. It's secure areas, it's all that stuff that people are afraid to bring up. So, because of that, it's kind of harder to convince people to come in and tell the story, their military part, and how it connects to watch collecting. So I want to be able to do that more often. I think that yes, I can bring in people from the industry. I can bring in people from watch brands, and I'll certainly will do that, continue to do that. But I think that the cool part that I want to do is the guys that do the more typical jobs in the military or the law enforcement, they're not necessarily the let's say special forces guys or submariner guys or the cool jobs that everyone wants to hear about. Those are the one that I want to be able to say, what's your story? How was it being a water purification guy in the military with watches? Those are hard, believe it or not, very hard to bring in the people that don't have that exposure typically because they feel weird about telling their story in connection to the military. So, that's what I want the podcast to move towards, as it continues to move ahead.
That'd be cool. That'd be cool. I think, like you said, bringing out, interviewing, I think just interviewing people that aren't your norm, like you said, I think is really cool to get the
Yeah.
exposure of different life experiences and different watches. I think it's a good idea. So, man, I think, obviously, clearly wish you all the best with that. And I'm sure people will, volunteer. And if not, I also know a few people that I'll definitely force your way to chat because obviously, share the love, right? In terms of what we've spoken about today, Alex, before we move on to closing notes, do you think we've missed anything about either yourself, your collection, or where your podcast is and where you want it to go?
No, I think we pretty much cover everything that I think, yeah, if we keep talking, we can talk for three more episodes,
Yeah, we're good to.
but
I
yeah.
think I've just hatched an idea as well for a future episode with you as well. So I'll drop you a message about that afterwards because we're not going to ruin that one. But I've got an idea. So definitely,
Yeah.
we'll definitely get you back onto my show again at least. But
For sure.
Definitely. But yeah, before we move on to closing notes, if you, like I said, if there's anything else that we have missed or you don't think we've missed, we'll obviously move on to the closing notes section of the podcast.
Yeah, no, let's move on to the closing
Yeah,
notes.
cool.
Yeah, I think that for me, one thing that I want to and you mentioned AWWC, the collaboration that they have with Notice. One thing that I want to mention is, I think a lot of people either have heard of or noticed AWWC already, Anti-Watch Watch Club. But one of my last episodes, I talked about the quality of their strap. And I mentioned that I don't know how they can beat the Decon because it's so popular right now. And all I will say is Alex took it as a challenge, their CEO, and they're coming out with a crazy, crazy strap that is very innovative. It's a lot of mixture of materials, a lot of innovation into that strap. And I think that it's something that a lot of our listeners as military, law enforcement and stuff like that will probably love. So it's pretty cool. He teased it already. I think that it's gonna be pretty cool. So keep your eyes peeled because I think that's probably gonna be one of those things that is gonna be more mass marketed. So AWWC is trying to bring in the guys that are not so into the military culture and want a little bit more subtlety into it. So yeah, keep an eye out because they're gonna start doing a lot more stuff that is more subtle, more into the watch community than just the LEO military community. And if you were waiting for stuff that is not always a skull and stuff like that to buy those products, that's gonna be it. And they're always a great cause because they're working for no money. They're putting that towards military community, LEO community, first responders to help. And I think it's a great thing. And they're a great group of people to ask questions about watches because they will give you advice, firsthand experience without, anything else in between. So it's a great group to follow. And like I said, that I think those new products that they're going to come out with more towards everyone as opposed to just the US military and stuff like that, I think it's going to be great.
I'm a big advocate for the Anti-Watch Club and what they do. I've interviewed Alex a few months back now. Like I said, good bloke, and like I said, I like that he supports the veteran community, the first responder, law enforcement community, and I think more of this needs to happen. But in both sides of the pond, I think veterans support and military support, public. Uniform public service support in general, I think needs to happen. And the fact that we've now, or you particularly, obviously in America, have got a group of people that are also into watches that have that out mindset, I think is fantastic. So yeah, guys, I'll put a link back into the show notes for the Anti-Watch Watch Club. And like I said, if there's more designs that are coming around in the future which are more watch specific, I think that'd be a really good move because I know from people that I've spoken to, particularly over in England, and again, this isn't a slight on them. I think what they're doing is fantastic. You talk about the designs being quite in your face, aren't they? They're quite bold at the moment, and I think for in the British psyche, it's just a little bit too bold for a lot of people. And again, and that's absolutely fine. We accept it as British people that that's their initial design ethos, and I think it's great. But the fact that they're developing more to do potential more subtle or more watch related designs as well in the future, I think be a really cool thing. But yes, shout out to Alex and obviously the Anti-Watch Watch Club guys for doing what they do. My closing note is a book. I'm on the third book, Alex, of the Red Sparrow series, the third and final one. By the time this episode airs, I would have finished it because obviously this is how podcast land works. I record a lot sooner before I release the episode. But guys, the book is called The Kremlin's Candidate, and it's the third and final installment of the Jason Matthews series, which follows effectively a Russian double agent. So the original book was turned into a film. I've mentioned this film in the original book before, but if you haven't listened to that episode, go check out Red Sparrow. It has got Jennifer Lawrence in it in the film if you're not into the books. But I do implore you to read the books because, obviously, from my point of view, the book is always better than the film. There's very few film adaptations that are as good as the book. But that's just my personal opinion. The film is still fantastic, though. So if you're not into the into books or you haven't got time, go check out the film. But the third installment of the series is what I'm listening to at the moment and reading. It's really good. And then the other shout out that I've got is for a company called HR4K. So HR4K is a veteran-owned company. I probably have mentioned them years back on the podcast, but just want to plug it because I've got a new t-shirt by them and it's great. And also they're, you know, they're veteran-owned. They support the community, veteran community and the military community in UK. They just do good stuff. So they're into their fitness. They're a bit of a lifestyle brand, I guess, really, or a lifestyle community, and they help with that side of it. So, you know, into their fitness, they like coffee, they like funky t-shirts with cool designs, and they like keeping fit because they have like a gym and all that kind of stuff. So if you don't follow them already, go check them out. And what's really cool is the actual company logo comes from something. So HR is actually the postcode for that area in the world, Hereford, obviously. And 4K is, I learned this, is 4K is the average speed that you need to average over the distance in order to pass SAS selection.
Oh, nice.
So that's where it comes from. That's what I was told. If I'm wrong, guys, drop me a message and correct me. However, I like the story. No, genuinely, like I like the story. If, and from, you know, I'll take the story from the person who told me because they firstly they have no reason to lie and they're quite, you know, they're well versed in all this kind of stuff. But I just like the fact that that's what it's called. So yeah, go check those out. Alex, thank you, bro, for giving up your time to jump on the podcast. I know that we've been on record a lot longer and it's one of my longer episodes, but I've clearly had a lot of fun speaking to you and finally getting to see you and speak to you properly. I would love to have you back on the show, and I've got an idea for how I would like that to happen. So I'll drop you a message, obviously, after we finish recording. But anything final before we close out this episode?
No, I appreciate you bringing me in. I had a blast, man. I love talking about watches, military stories. So, I had a blast with you, and we will definitely do it again.
Happy days, man. Let's just hope that next time you record, though, you're not driving around the center of town trying to find a venue for a leaving do. Guys, like I said, dedication to the podcast. He is recording in his car, but let's hope for next one that you're recording at home.
For
So yeah.
sure, yeah,
Yeah,
definitely.
definitely. All right, guys. The next episode, just so you're aware, next episode, guys, is going to be it's going to be effectively a introduction slash summary of the UK World Time event. Like I said, that's a guarantee that that's the next episode, so look forward to that one. But until then, guys, obviously take care, and I'll catch you in a bit. Bye.